week then of the introductory course. And so I'll say a little bit to repeat from last week, and then we'll go on and expand on the instructions. The way the teaching works in these 5 weeks is that I expand on the instructions week by week, so we include more areas of our experience as what we can include as part of the mindfulness practice. One of the things we're developing in mindfulness is a capacity to be receptive to our experience rather than being reactive to our experience. And I think it happens all too easily for many of us that something occurs in our life and then our reactive feelings, emotions, our associated thinking, our reactive actions that happen kind of automatically, very quickly. And before we can really see and feel the whole situation as it is. And mindfulness involves is developing kind of receptive ability to just what is actually happening here, being attentive to what's happening here, to actually sense within us, in our body, in our feelings, in our mind, what is actually happening here, so that we can respond with some wisdom rather than from reactivity. Quotes by Thomas Merton, who I like, and he writes, "To allow oneself to be carried away by a multitude of conflicting concerns, to surrender to too many demands, to commit oneself to too many projects, to want to help everyone in everything, is to succumb to violence." And many of us, I think, live very busy and full and hectic lives. And I think many of us can feel in our bodies and our health the consequences of doing that, living reactively. So the first thing we do in meditation to some degree is to learn to be present, to learn to have enough stability of body, stability of mind, so we can simply start noticing what's happening here in the present moment. And the first thing we notice for many people when they first sit down is the mind is often quite busy and active and agitated, and we tend to get carried off and swept up into our thoughts, our concerns, reviewing a day or planning tomorrow or whatever it might be. And that's actually important to realize that the mind has a tendency. The first thing we want to do in meditation, in a sense, is to just learn to be stable, learn to be present, to somehow, in a very simple way, learn the ability to be present, to stabilize ourselves in the present moment. In this regard, I want to mention the difference between being in our direct experience and being in the commentary we have about the experience. And the analogy I like for using for this has to do with watching football on television. And it could be almost anything, you know, on television, I suppose. But because last year I was watching football, and my friend had the remote control. And in the commercials at the beginning, he very diligently hit the mute. And when the commercials were over, he didn't release the mute. So it stayed, you know, I was polite, you know, and so we just sat there, kind of curious, and so what, you know, why wasn't he turning on the sound? And so I just watched. And so we watched television in silence. We watched the football game in silence. And at some point or other, he'd hit the button and the sound would come on. And I noticed the great difference between watching television with the sound and without the sound. That with the sound, what happened with football is you have the commentator constantly commentating about the game. And part of the job of the commentator is to make you excited and put you on the edge of your seat and, you know, and rally for the troops or whatever, to get depressed when they get tackled or whatever. And you're kind of, your emotions are kind of swept up by the tone and the voice and the speed and everything of the commentator. And normally, at least when I watch football, I don't distinguish between the game is in front of me and what my experience is that's being filtered or being influenced by the commentator. They're intertwined experiences. But by turning off the sound, you realize that the game is very different from the commentator. What happens happening with the commentary, it's actually a much calmer, more quieter, settled experience. Just, you know, just there they are, and they're falling down, they're getting up, and you know, you can kind of follow the game. And I mean, the same thing, you know, with canned laughter on television, right? I mean, things that aren't funny at all we'll laugh at because we're being influenced by the canned laughter. So the same way with our inner experience, with ourselves, there's a commentary that goes on, and there's what's really happening. And for many of us, what happens is that many of us are living in the commentary. And we don't really see that the experience and the commentary are two different things. So for example, you have a knee pain, you're meditating, your knee hurts a little bit, it aches. And so that's kind of a neutral event, it aches, you know, so what, it, you know. But then the commentary is, oh my God, I'm going to probably stretch that tendon too much, and then I'm going to need an operation, but I don't have enough health insurance, and I can't afford better health insurance, maybe I should get a better job, and I'm always struggling with work, and I can't find just the right job, and I haven't really found what I want to do in my life yet, and maybe I should go back to school, and maybe a career counselor would help me, or maybe just forget it all and go to the South Pacific for a while. And then you realize you're sitting there, and all that's happening, you're sitting there and your knee hurts a little bit. And you've been lost in this train of thought, this associated thinking. You were lost in the commentary. And that commentary had nothing to do at some point with the knee. The same thing. So sometimes what we notice is the commentary that we live in has nothing to do with actually what's going on in the present. So that's one realization you might have in sitting. The other realization you might have that is that your commentary is about what's happening, but you're living in the commentary rather than, you're living in the story about the knee rather than living in the experience of the discomfort in the knee. So what we're trying to do initially in meditation is not only to become settled in the present moment, to be present in the present moment, but to reside, to place our center of gravity of our attention in what we call the direct experience, as opposed to letting the center of our attention be in the commentary. And isn't it the commentary has to stop? But if you see these somewhat different and distinct phenomena, the choice we're making is to let ourselves rest their attention in our direct experience, rather than letting our attention be swept up and lost in the disembodied virtual world of our thoughts, of our commentary. So in the beginning of meditation, we're just simply trying to arrive in our experience. And if you notice, for example, you're staying with your breath, and you notice you start having commentary about your breath. Oh, I'm not doing it well enough, or maybe I'm doing really well, or maybe I'm not breathing quite the right way, or maybe I should try a little bit harder in a certain way, or all these thoughts about the breath occur. If you notice that, notice that that's a commentary and not the experience of breathing itself. And the choice we make in meditation is to let the center of gravity of our attention then settle itself on the experience, rather than letting the center of gravity of our attention rest in the commentary. Does that make sense? So what we want to do is to rest more in the embodied experience we're having. A big part of mindfulness practice is about becoming embodied. And it's perhaps a little bit of a pity that we chose in English to translate the word sati, the Buddhist word sati, smriti in Sanskrit, as the word mindfulness, because in the West we tend to give too much attention to our mind, to our thoughts. And as partly as a corrective to that, but partly because that's really where our full balanced life is a big part of mindfulness is learning to be embodied, to let our awareness arise from our body. So it's our body that's aware, rather than it's our mind being thoughtful about what's going on in the body. So let's begin by sitting now. So why don't you take a comfortable posture. Another example of this theme that I'm trying to explain here is from this story. The students were absorbed in a discussion of Lao Tzu's dictum from the Tao Te Ching. Those who know do not say. Those who say do not know. When the master entered, they asked him what the words meant. The master asked, "Which of you knows the fragrance of a rose?" All of them expressed that they knew. Then he said, "Explain it in words." And all of them were silent. So let's, the same way that we smell the fragrance of a rose, gently close your eyes. And then in the beginning of meditation, it's nice to take a couple of three deep breaths. And part of the function of taking some deep breaths is to connect to your body. And as you breathe out, settle into your body. Let go into your body. And then breathing normally. It's nice also at the beginning of a sitting to scan your body and relax whatever coarse muscles might be a little bit tight or tense. Not to make a project out of it, but just if it's easy to relax perhaps the forehead. To let the eyes be soft. Resting in the sockets. If it's easy, you can soften the jaw. And the shoulders. And if they don't relax, at least send them, let them be spacious around them. And the stomach, the abdomen, letting the stomach be soft, relaxed. Now many of us, many people in our culture, in our society, struggle with their body image, the image they have of their body, the idea of what their body should look like. And we feel that we're too big or too small or too thin or too fat or the wrong color hair or the wrong kind of nose, and whatever. So you might think for a moment, just reflect for a moment, on the image you have of your body. And now, let go of the image. And now, sense and feel, what is your body's experience of itself? Without the commentary, without the ideas, how does the body experience itself? Feel the aliveness, the sense of presence, the beingness of being in a body, of having a body. And then within the body, as part of the body, become aware of your breathing. There's no need to struggle against anything or to try to create any special state or experience. Simply allow yourself to rest in the direct experience of breathing, in the way the breath experiences itself, in the way the body experiences the breathing. And if the mind wanders away, no need to be concerned. Just whenever you notice the mind has drifted away, return your attention to your embodied sense of breathing, letting the center of gravity of your attention be in the experience of breathing within the body. Let go of your thoughts and concerns, and allow the physical experience of breathing to come to you. Allow the experience of breathing to reveal itself gently into the spacious field of awareness. And then in order to help you stay present with the breath, you can label the in-breaths and out-breaths, in and out, or rising, falling, as you experience the chest or the stomach, rise and fall. And then as we continue sitting here, let go of attending to the breath. And now look through your body. And is there any, what is the strongest sensation you have now in your body? What is the strongest physical sensation? And whatever that might be, bring your attention to that part of the body. Not to change it, not to judge it, but simply to bring presence, bring awareness to the sensations of that part of the body. And allowing awareness. Feel the sensations from the inside. Feel exactly where they might be. How close can you get to them with your awareness? If it's appropriate, can you see the difference between the commentary and the actual sensations? And then you can go back and just be with your breath a little bit longer. For about a minute, we'll keep sitting. And this last minute, rest your awareness in the breathing, in the breath. So in expanding the instructions beyond just attending to the breath, I think it's useful to distinguish between the foreground and background of attention. That what we do in mindfulness initially is we place the breath in the foreground of our attention. In the background of our attention, there might be thoughts or sensations or sounds or feelings. As long as they're in the background, then it's easy for you in the foreground to stay attentive with the breathing. Just leave all the stuff in the background and stay as close as you can, resting in the breath. At some point or other, what will happen is something else from the background or something will arise that puts itself into the foreground and kind of wants to replace the breath. The basic instructions is when something that happens is we simply let go of the breath and we take that new thing as being the subject of meditation where we rest our attention. So in a sense, we don't struggle against anything in this kind of meditation. It's something like, you know, something else is happening, we're struggling against it because we're supposed to be with the breath. We just pick that up as that is the meditative object. That's what we meditate on then, is what arises. But in this next week now, I want to keep it very simple and just say, just expand the instructions to include the sensations of the body so we can get familiar with a very simple part of our being. And because the body and the breath, it's much clearer that our bodily experience and our experience of our breathing, it doesn't really belong to the world of thoughts, to thinking. And since many of us are often lost in our thoughts, it's very useful to just ground ourselves in something very simple. Something physical, something embodied. So place the breath at the center of your meditation. And then if something happens elsewhere in your body that seems more prominent, more predominant than your ability to stay present with the breath, it kind of is tugging at your attention, then simply let go of the breath and place your attention on that place in your body where you feel those strong sensations, that strong sensation. And then you can name it. You can label it. So, for example, if it's the ache in the knee, you can just name it, aching, or pain. And the naming it is in part just helping the mind, it's kind of like nudging the mind to really rest itself, to be present for that area, that place where those sensations are. So it's kind of like using the mind from, using a thought to keep the thoughts from distracting you. And the thinking is very, the mental noting is very, very subtle, very, very soft, kind of, the softest kind of mental noting, you can kind of whisper of a mind you can think of, you kind of use it. And 95% of what you're doing is resting and sensing your way into feeling. It's a sensory awareness exercise. It's a sensual exercise to sense and feel what is going on in the body that's demanding your attention, that's strong. So, for example, the knee pain. So you go and you label it aching. And you go in, you feel it. Where actually is that ache? Where can you pinpoint it exactly? I think for many of us in our American culture, if there's some discomfort, for example, the usual tendency, almost automatic, is to do whatever we can to avoid it and to get away from it or to numb it or do something. And in some ways, the mindfulness practice is counterintuitive because what we're doing here is we're turning into something. We're actually bringing our attention more closely to it rather than avoiding it or ignoring it. So we go in and we feel it carefully. Well, what is this like? And put our attention in the exact place. And what's very fascinating is if you look very, very carefully, you might see that it's not actually located in one place, but it's actually a lot of small sensations that are moving about. And so you can kind of be with that, be with the dance of the sensations. And then you explore it. What actually is a sensation you're feeling? So, for example, if it's a knee ache, you might feel a stretching or a burning or a twisting or a stabbing or all kinds of wonderful sensations, hardness. If a strong sensation is a pleasant sensation, which there might be in meditation, maybe you feel a tremendous, nice kind of warmth coming through your chest or through your cheeks, then you can bring your attention there. And just in the same way, just without being attached to it or being trying to hold on to it, just bring your attention and feel what is that like. Where is that sense of warmth, that sense of tingling, that sense of smoothness or whatever? And sense it and feel it and notice what are actually sensations make up that experience. Kind of resting your attention there. noticing the difference between the commentary and just resting in the experience itself. As long as the physical sensation is predominant, is strong, you can just stay there with it. Be there with it, let it be there. Kind of use the mental noting to stay there, to kind of rest the mind there. Just like if it's ache in the knee, just ache, you know, pain. Or if it's the warmth in the cheeks, you can say warmth, just to stay there. If at some point the experience is well enough acknowledged and no longer wants your attention, and it's easy to go back to the breath, you can go back to your experience of breathing. If it kind of wants your attention for a long time, it's quite strong, there's no problem, that becomes your meditation. And you can stay there a whole period of meditation, investigating it, being with it, resting in that experience. Part of what you want to do, though, is you want to see there's a difference between the experience itself and the relationship you have to it. So, for example, if it's a knee pain, the pain in the knee is a very different experience from hating the pain, or feeling self-pity about the pain, or fantasizing about the South Pacific, you know, whatever it might, you know, come out of the pain itself. And often the relationship we form is really where the pain is, the suffering is in our life, the anxiety. The experience itself is actually relatively neutral from a Buddhist point of view. The anxiety arises out of the relationship we have with it. So being able to see the difference between the two is one way to feel a little bit more at ease in our life, because we don't necessarily then confuse the experience with the commentary, with the relationship we formed about it. So we stay with the experience, the physical thing. At some point it either goes away or it's well enough acknowledged, and then we go back to the breathing. If some other strong physical sensation arises, then we go to that. If one strong physical sensation arises, and then another one arises that's stronger, or the first one disappears and another one appears, you don't have to go back to the breath. You just go to the next one. And it can be a dance of being in the body, just a wonderful dance, whatever it happens to arise. The breath is the default. You know, if you wonder where you're at and what you should pay attention to, just come back to your breathing. It's always there for you. Just be with the breath until it's obvious that something else wants your attention. You don't have to analyze and question, you know, should I be somewhere else? Is some sensation at the point? It's only when it's really obvious. It's really getting difficult to stay with the breath because something else is wanting your attention. The same for sounds. Sounds, from a Buddhist point of view, are just other sensations. So if there's some loud sounds outside that want your attention, just bring your attention to the sound and do listening meditation. Listening, hearing, sound. And at some point the sound will go away or no longer has your attention, and then you go back to the breathing. So there's no sounds. Sounds aren't distractions for meditations. They're just something else, somewhere else to put your attention. And so what we're developing is a relaxed, fluid attention that it can flow, in a sense, for whatever kind of arises and wants our attention. And then find our ground, find our calm, find our presence in the predominant, rather than, you know, holding the predominant at a distance and saying, well, I can't deal with that, and I'm trying to get calm, or I'm trying to do something. Does that make sense? So the body is a very important part of mindfulness practice. And there's a tremendous amount of wisdom to be found in the body. Buddhism teaches that the mind-body is a unitary event. That the split that sometimes we talk about in the West between the mind and the body is not something that's recognized in Buddhism. So in a sense, Buddhists would say, you know, where's your mind? Buddhists say, well, the mind is the whole show. Where's your body? The body's the whole show, including the mind. These two things arise together, exist together. And the degree in which we keep ourselves separate from our body, the degree we also keep, in Buddhist point of view, we keep ourselves separate from our mind, separate from ourselves. If you keep yourself separate from your body, not allowing yourself to experience your body, you become not only a stranger to your body, but you become a stranger to yourself. There was an article in the Uthni Reader some years ago, and the title of the article was The Body, Friend, Foe, or Total Stranger. So become aware of the body. It's very useful just going around in our daily life to check into what's happening in our body, feeling our body, sensing our body. Because the body will often tell us very directly what is our relationship to what's happening here? We're afraid, the shoulders go up. We get angry and there's, you know, our fists tighten up or our jaw tightens up. We feel happy and there's a kind of warmth, tingling, kind of openness perhaps in the chest area. The body will tell you a lot, sometimes much more honestly than what the mind will tell you. So it's very, very, very useful to drop down into the body and get a sense of it. And you might experiment as you go through your days. If there's opportunities, for example, standing in line at Safeway. What's your body feel like? What's going on there? And you might be surprised. A lot of what's happening in mindfulness meditation, there's two things that's happening in mindfulness meditation, we could say. One is we're being mindful. We're noticing what's actually happening. And noticing is a very plain, simple thing that's incredibly powerful. And maybe it takes a while of practice to realize how powerful the simple act of recognition, of noticing what's happening at the present moment, what that is like. So it's noticing. The other thing that's happening is we're learning to leave ourselves alone. We're not interfering with how we actually are when we sit down. You can relax a little bit when you first sit down, kind of relax your shoulders a little bit. But after that initial kind of arriving, if you get tense, don't try to manipulate and relax and stretch and kind of do something. Just allow yourself to be as you are. Don't try to manipulate or interfere or change, but allow the power of awareness do whatever it wants to do. So there's a non-interfering awareness. It's kind of like the analogy in Buddhism of mindfulness is turning on a light in a dark room. And mindfulness and the power of the mind to notice, to be aware, is considered to be a light. And we awaken, right? We awaken this light. We awaken understanding and awareness of actually deeply what's going on in our life. But I'm thinking lately that it's more like, rather than turning on a light in a dark room, it's like turning on a light in a dark greenhouse that's full of plants. The light itself doesn't interfere with anything. But the fact that the light is there, if it's kind of a solar light or whatever, the plants start growing. These things start happening. The same thing, if we bring the light of our awareness to our inner life, to our physical life, to our body, there's a way in which that begins releasing, much more powerfully than almost anything else, the inner processes of healing, the inner processes of unfoldment that happen in both in a psychological and a spiritual and a physical life. But it's not from trying to do anything. It's not like trying to. As soon as you're trying to do something, as soon as you're trying to manipulate and change who you are, then you're not accepting who you are. And then you're in the future. And in your future, you're not in the present. And if you're not in the present, you can't be at home. And if you're not at home, you can't heal yourself. So you can't even want to heal yourself too much, right? You understand the point? So it's a very radical acceptance is part of this mindfulness. Can you unconditionally accept as who you are as you are, whether you like what's happening or if you don't like it, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant, can you simply be there? And some of you can say, well, why do you have to be with stuff that's unpleasant? Why can't I just hang on to the pleasant? Because we're cultivating in mindfulness is freedom, not holding on or rejecting anything. And freedom isn't dependent upon what kind of experience you're having. So there's a wonderful story again. I was neurotic for years. I was anxious and depressed and selfish. Everyone kept telling me to change. I resented them, and I agreed with them, and I wanted to change, but simply couldn't, no matter how hard I tried. What hurt the most was that, like the others, my best friend kept insisting that I change. So I felt powerless and trapped. Then one day, another friend said to me, "Don't change. I love you as you are." Those words were music to my ears. Don't change, don't change, don't change. I love you as you are. I relaxed, I came alive, and suddenly I changed. Now I know that I couldn't really change until I found someone who would love me whether I changed or not. And that someone can be yourself. And part of the premise of mindfulness practice is to bring awareness, uninterfering, unmanipulating awareness that accepts you as you are. It doesn't mean I'm going to accept myself once my shoulders relax. I'm going to accept myself when I'm a little bit less neurotic or whatever. To accept as you happen to be when you sit down, as you happen to be when you notice where you're at. So we think in Buddhism that awareness and acceptance, and we could almost say love, are synonymous. Because love is a kind of acceptance of oneself or of the other as they are. That's a big part of it. So awareness, acceptance, and love. So can we bring this kind of friendliness? Can we bring an uninterfering awareness, accepting awareness? This is what's going on. And now it gets to be a challenge, of course, if you have unpleasant physical experiences. And it's also a challenge if you have very pleasant ones. Because we don't accept them equally. We don't want to simply say, oh, I can accept the pleasant ones. Really what you're doing is you're hanging on them, right? So that's kind of the instructions now. At this point. In that sitting we just had, I asked you at the end to find a strong sensation in your body and bring your awareness there. What happened to some of you when you did that?
Pain was much more easy to deal with.
Easier to deal with?
Yeah. It either melted or it was livable.
Great. Allowing awareness. Mm-hmm. Yes?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting how you said you really try to pinpoint it. It seems to move around you. That's pretty much what I'm wondering. I try to focus in exactly where it is and what it feels like. It seems to dissipate and move.
And you won't always experience that way. But if you're able to bring very careful attention to the phenomena in the body, it's actually constantly in motion. It's a dance. And then you realize after a while that the idea of permanence, that, you know, oh, this is going to be forever, this pain or whatever, or this, you know, solid, that it's really solid, that's a construct of the mind. It's a commentary that imposes the idea of permanence. And that if we actually experience it intimately, you find that it's a dance. And then you can learn to dance with it. So perhaps this is an interesting example where if we don't really attend fully to something which is uncomfortable, then the commentary, the reactions that we have towards it tend to kind of get stronger, kind of the ice undercurrents, and it might actually propel us at some point to the restlessness to run away. But if we actually turn towards it and let the relationship kind of relax, it's a lot easier to be present, and the kind of unconscious welling up of different reactions and reactivity won't necessarily happen. This is what you saw. It said that one of the tenets of Buddhism is that you cannot become free of something unless you recognize it. If something exists, you can't be free of it unless you recognize it. So the attempt to run away from something doesn't really work. The effort to numb ourselves or avoid doesn't really work so well to make us free. Yes?
Front what? In the front and down.
Yeah.
There's
projects the concept onto the experience. So one of the things I said in the part of the instructions was, let the breath come to you. So you should allow the breath to be as it is and let it tell you what it is. Rather than what we often do instead is we bring the mind and put it on the breath, telling the breath what to do. So great. So sometimes backing off from the breath for a while and then coming back is one way of letting the breath be free. Yes?
Is there a difference between the chattering of the mind and the chattering of the body? Is one, I mean, if you listen to the chattering of the body, then the chattering of the mind goes away?
It might, I don't know. It might, but the difference is that I don't know what you mean by the chattering of the body.
Well, like being aware of all these things going on, it's almost like the same thing.
Yeah. What I'm about to say isn't supposed to be taken some absolute distinction, but the sensations of the body as they fire and move and do all these things is the unfolding of a process of impermanence and change and release, in a sense. The chattering of the mind, it's the mind which fuels our reactivity. And because we identify with it, then we think and we have reactions and stories. And those stories and reactivity then translate into the body, and the body gets tense, for example. But if you relax into the body, what you'll find is many, many different sensations. And you rest in those sensations and let them do whatever they want. But the physical, that's one of the advantages of being in the physical, is that when you're in the physical body itself will not identify with anything. And if you're not identifying with anything, then there's a possibility of becoming free. And if you're not identifying with anything, then the inner process will unfold the way it wants to unfold. So it's actually very useful if you're very anxious and your body feels very kind of nervous or restless or anxious. Sit and close your eyes and allow the dance of restless feelings and anxious feelings to move through your body, course through your body. And you'd be kind of like an open antenna to just receive and sense and feel all that. And probably you'll find yourself calming down because you're not fueling it anymore. You're not adding to it by the worry and the anxiety of the mind. So I wouldn't equate the chattering of the body with the chattering of the mind. If you have a lot of sensation in your body, just rest in those. How was it when I asked you ask you what was the body's experience of itself? Was that interesting for some of you? Did that give you a sense of a non-commentary, non-conceptual way of resting in your physical experience? Or was it esoteric? That's great. That's great. So when you have eaten too much, your stomach's full, then the feelings of pressure become the subject of meditation. If you've eaten too much, and your stomach is full and it's quite strong, the sensations, then the sensations of pressure become what you meditate on. Rather than thinking those sensations are getting in the way.
I found your comment about the body experience of the body to be kind of confusing because my sense of experience is it's like conceptual. So it's like, what is the your concept of a non-concept or something?
Well, I think I think that's very interesting. So maybe you want to explore that a little bit, see if you can see the difference between a conceptual experience and experience unmediated by concepts. Okay. Well, with the instructions next week, you'll learn you don't have to back off from it. Next week we'll talk about emotions. So let's end now with a little bit more sitting. Do a little exercise as part of the beginning of the sitting, maybe to help you understand this little. So close your eyes and take a deep breath. And then take one of your fingers and place it on your thigh. And then just feel the contact between your finger and your thigh, and feeling the contact, slowly increase the pressure until you're pressing quite hard but not hurting yourself, and feel how the sensations change, and then when you're pressing somewhat hard, just hold it there and feel the sensations. What are the particular sensations that make up the experience there? Hardness, smoothness, pressure, tautness, warmth. And then feeling how the sensations, the particular sensations change. Slowly let go of most of the pressure. And keep enough pressure so you can feel the contact. Now, in the world of your direct experience, there is no finger and there's no thigh. What there is in your direct experience is sensations of pressure or contact or warmth or smoothness or hardness. There are particular sensations that, with our eyes closed, we have to use our memory or analysis to apply ideas of finger and thigh to those kinds of sensations. They're simply sensations right now, floating in a sea of space, particular sensations. So let your hands be relaxed. Kind of return your hands. And then feel the contact of your body against your cushion or your chair. What are the particular sensations that tell you that you have this contact? Do you feel weight? Do you feel pressure? Hardness? Vibration? Temperature? Again, with your eyes closed, there are particular sensations floating in space. And then let your attention rest in your breathing. And take a few moments now to feel and sense the particular sensations that come into play as you breathe. And let the sensations speak for themselves. Let the sensations of breathing, let those arise in an accepting way into your awareness. Allowing yourself to rest with the breathing. Accepting yourself as you are. No need to change or be different. In the midst of who you are at this moment, breathing. Letting go of your thoughts and concerns. Returning over and over again to the breath. And if some strong physical sensation arises, then you can let go of the breath and bring your attention, your accepting attention, to those physical sensations. And when they've passed or they no longer grab your attention, then go back again and resting yourself again with the breathing. And there's no need to struggle against your thoughts and your thinking, the monkey mind. Just whenever you remember and you can, let the center of gravity of your attention, let your attention rest itself in the very simple experience of breathing in and breathing out. Cultivating the ability to be in the present moment by learning to be present for this very in-breath, for this very out-breath. And then in the last minute or so of the sitting, allow yourself to be as you are and let the awareness of the present moment, the awareness of the breath and the body, let it be an all-accepting awareness, a kind of loving awareness, loving you just the way you are. So thank you all, and I encourage you to experiment and explore the instructions on including the body as part of the meditation. And next week I'll talk about how to include emotions. So thank you all very much, and have a nice Halloween.
Drive carefully. Candy all over the road.